Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 20th, 2016. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I think I'm McDermott and you're Worm, right?
I think that would be a pretty safe...
You're always trying to get me into trouble, and I'm always trying to... get out of it, and you do all the, you know, the crazy things, and
you're more like Kanish, but
yeah, I'm more like Kanish. I don't see any angle. I don't have stones to play any angles. And of course, we're talking about the Trump Taj Mahal Poker Room. It's open again.
Yes.
Someone alert those guys. Tell them to show up. I want to play in a ring game.
Yes, you know, I don't know about relaxation therapist or anything like that. But no, this is big news. Trump Taj Mahal reopened. Folks might have remembered that the poker room made famous by, of course, the movie Rounders had shut its doors in February 2015. But they remodeled it, reopened it, and had a soft opening last week. Official reopening is set for today, which is actually tomorrow, which is May 20th. So it may not even be tomorrow or today, depending on when you listen to this. Anyhow, so
that's right.
May 20th. And so the good news here is that new management, new ownership of the casino sees value in poker again, which is always a big thing for us, I think. You know, when I travel around the country, and it's really tough when I go to these casinos and see how little, you know, general managers or owners really care about poker, because it doesn't bring in a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what they made, and this article is in the Press of Atlantic City, essentially said what I've always said, and all these poker managers always say, is what they found was when they closed the poker room, overall business went down because they lost players that they did care about.
Right.
Because, you know, this happens. This is my marriage is a perfect example. My wife doesn't play poker, but she plays slots and roulette when I'm playing poker. So if you don't have a poker room in your casino, you don't get my play, which you don't really care about, but you don't get her play, which you do care about.
That's right.
So that's exactly what happened here. So Trump Taj Mahal is back open, and we did have a conversation with the manager, Tom Gitto, who was manager before yesterday, and he says things are going well. And get on down to Atlantic City and relive Rounders.
So the key here, then, do you think, is to remember what happened before February 2015, why business went down. Of course, we know that it has to do with the Borgata and Harrah's being right there, too, and so successful and large and whatever. But and then discovering what that is and then doing things differently now, right? They're not going to just keep saying, well, we worship Laura's business, so we're just going to open this room, and even if it fails, doesn't matter, we're going to keep it open. So they got to be doing things differently, too, as well, I would assume.
Right. I would think, you know, this is a complete... you know, relook at how they operate poker there. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously it's a very tough market because Borgata is big and strong, and of course, you know, all Atlantic City has lost a lot of business as casinos have opened all around up there.
Right.
You know, Philadelphia and Connecticut and all those places. So, it does sound like they are raring to go and to put a good product out for people to enjoy. So, we'll
very
see.
Cool.
But... always good when you see a... because it's funny, we don't normally talk about rooms reopening on this show because, you know, 20 of them open or reopen.
Right.
Every year, but this is an iconic one. So.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say the same thing. It's iconic. This is the room, you know. That's cool.
And hey, it's a big news for Atlantic... big news week for Atlantic City for another reason as well, too. On Saturday, which will be May 21st, will be the first... unquote, on-live tournament in the city in Resorts Casino Hotel, and its online poker partner, PokerStars, hosts about 100 players who will compete in a tournament at Resorts but on their laptops. And that's funny. I was just going to correct that. We are so anal about this.
So, I know. This is just our own personal notes on these files, too. We're making all these corrections as we're doing the show, and it's never going to see the light of day anywhere else, but we still want to make sure we're doing it right. I don't get this. Do you get this?
No,
I don't get
this. I totally get this, and quite honestly, I was trying to pitch this to, you remember Ultimate Poker, which was one of the first online sites that was legal in Nevada back when they passed, and we had a fairly decent relationship with them. They advertised with us, and I was actually pushing them to do an Antia poker tour that would be online, but it didn't have to be completely online. It could be, and I didn't come up with this term on live. I love that somebody came up with that. But, you know, I mean, here's the thing is that, and I really think that casinos in Nevada and Atlantic City and Delaware are missing out on this, that this is a tourism thing. You know, people want to play online poker, not just because it's convenient or it's easy, but some people actually prefer online to live, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can definitely market to those people, hey, you come here, because all these states, as long as you're within the state, then you can play, I believe. Certainly, I know that's the case in New Jersey. So, you know, come here and play online poker and stay at our resort. And then maybe, you know, when you decide to not Howard Hughes it and open the shades on their right. room, you might actually want to walk out and actually spend money elsewhere. So... and this is part of what I was trying to pitch to him. It's like, you could do, you know, a whole series online, but then you can have one there where people are actually literally in a room playing against each other on their laptops. Now, it sounds weird, I know, but I know some people that will probably really enjoy this, so I'm going to be interested to see how it goes. But no, I'm a big fan of this.
Yeah, anything, for me, anything that continues poker, I'm fine with. It's not that I don't appreciate this, or I don't think it's, you know, worth doing or whatever. It is kind of odd. And I would love to see a little bit of a video of that room. Right? Like just all these guys sitting around laptops playing, and then like if somebody goes, no, and then you see somebody else on the other side of the room snickering, it's like, were they at the table? Who's, you know what I mean? It's bizarre. It's really a bizarre thing. But I love that name too, On Live. That's hilarious.
Yeah. I would love for the World Series to do this for their online tournament they're doing this year, rather than bring the final table back to finish it out live.
Yeah,
I would rather see them. Wouldn't that be awesome? Like, you have this their big studio thing, final table, feature final table, but instead of somebody dealing cards, there's
just laptops on the table.
Laptops around.
That would be pretty damn funny. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that could maybe this will be the boom thing, Scott. That we
yeah, it could be.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Okay, any updates? Don't forget the Deep Stack Charity Classic in Daytona Beach, Florida this weekend. Sunday's main tournament is sold out, but they're accepting alternates. There are several other events from Friday through Monday featuring Phil Hellmuth, Dennis Phillips, and Greg Raymer that you can still enter. Scott's going to be there for Sunday's main and Saturday's barbecue and brews event with Norman Chad.
We'll meet some Norman Chad.
Yeah. And just announced for Monday is a 100K buy-in cash game.
Wowzer.
Spectators are welcome. All the details can be found at DeepStackCharityPokerFestival.com. That's got to be the biggest cash game in Florida history.
I would think so.
As far as buy-in.
Right. When they told me that, I mean, now who knows? But I had not heard of anything bigger than that before, too. So.
Yeah, it's huge.
It sounded like they were trying to get two tables going for a while, and then they decided to keep it to one because some of the people that are buying in are doing so because they want to play with Hill Helmius.
So,
you can't be at two tables at once. So, but that's going to be amazing. So that's what I asked. I'm like, you know, hey, can we show up and watch this thing? Because I know a lot of our listeners here have an extra 100K in the couch cushions to to buy in. But if you're going to be in the area, you want to watch literally $1 million on the table.
That's crazy.
This is a great opportunity. So, but this whole weekend is a lot of fun. I mean, they've really taken. Remember when we first started working with the Deep Stack Charity Classic? It was this one tournament on Sunday, which was amazing.
Yep.
And now it's turned into, I think there's 7 or 8 events now throughout the week. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to my my barbecue and brews with Norman Chad. I might take my Pabst Canada autograph just to show it off.
I think we have something to do with this expansion as well, because we had constantly been telling them that we know. You know, the Charity Classic deals with some religious aspects where they didn't want to have their event on a certain day, Saturday or whatever. But
yep.
But, I mean, we always said to them, it's too bad you can't do this stuff over. And we kept trying to say, let's figure out a way. And it looks like they finally are embracing that. And it's great. It's such a successful weekend. Why, you know, a tournament, why not make it like this whole, you know, like you said, festival. It's fantastic. So I'm very happy.
Well, yeah, it's really interesting that when you're kind of painted into a corner, how you can get creative to figure out how to get out of that corner.
Yeah.
So, you know, this event was on a Sunday. They absolutely filled the entire 50-table room. They actually even paid the fee to have more tables added.
Yeah.
And filled those tables, and then a huge long list of alternates. And then, I mean, what do you do to make it bigger than that after that point? Because you can't, you know, like I said, we can't do 2 days or anything like that. And even if you could do it over 2 days or 3 days, I think that kind of kills the event. This event is amazing because you start with your little breakfast buffet that's included, and mm-hmm. then you have an Outback dinner or Carrabba's or something like that, and all that. So it's fun for one day. So then they, you know, how do you make this work otherwise? So hey, let's just do other events around it and
yep.
make those all kind of fun for their own reasons. So kudos to them. So I'm looking forward to it, and Laura is too because she gets to stay at that nice hotel.
Yeah, that nice hotel. We were there a couple times. It's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And also some pretty cool news here. Royal Caribbean has rolled out its Voom high-speed internet service to all ships, allowing guests to surf the web and even stream Netflix. That's not an endorsement at all, but at high speeds while at sea. Antioch Cruise guests who book one of the two internet packages before sale date will get 30% off the rate. For more information, visit antiochcruises.com. There's nothing more frustrating than internet at sea.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now that they've probably, and we haven't experienced it yet, but we're assuming there's no way they would make this big deal about it and whatever without it being, you know, pretty much up to par with what we expect for standards. So that's good news, because a lot of times we've lost guests because they said, you know, what's the internet like? And you got to be honest with them, because if they pay all that money to be on a cruise ship and then they can't do their job, they're going to kill you. So
right.
So now that when they say it, now we'll be like, hey, it's just like the internet at your office or in your bedroom. You know, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, and I think the reviews I've read so far, everybody seems to be pretty high on it. So I'll be excited to check this out on our next cruise, our Alaska cruise.
Alaska cruise, yeah.
In August, so. So yeah, if you've not booked because you can't be away from work or home, now you don't have an excuse.
That's right. Now you have to be there. We expect all of you to be there now. Each week we spotlight a listener who emails us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Jared. Says, love the podcast. Thanks, buddy. So I have heard you guys talk about the legality of playing online in the United States and how it is not illegal, but not totally legal and sort of in a gray area. Long story short, I bought into an online site and I pretty quickly turned $50 into $600. Now I'm not sure what to do. If I cash out from online living in a state that is not completely legal, what do I do to make sure everything is copacetic, or should I just keep it online until hopefully someday when we can play online again? And he says, bonus question, I moved from California where there was a poker room anywhere I lived within 45 minutes or so. Now I live in New York City, and even the casino near here doesn't seem to even have a poker room. Where do I play live poker in New York City with no car?
Yeah, I moved this up on the, since we had this whole Atlantic City going, I thought I'd bump it up here. So I'll take the second question first. Atlantic City is a short bus ride away. And I think there might even be buses to Mohegan Sun or Foxwoods from New York City. I could be wrong. But that's one option. Obviously, there's a lot of underground games in New York City, which also operate in this gray area as well,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I would imagine we can probably get some of our listeners to get on PokerRadius.com and explain how that works to folks and give Jared here a little idea of where they are and how they work and see whether that works for you. But those would be my suggestions. And of course, and then also you can take the subway right across to New Jersey and play online. Completely legal there.
Right. Well, I was going to say is, what I like about this question is that it shows what we have created here, and that's a community. If you want the real answer, you can just go to PokerRadius.com if you're not already a member on there and start your own thread. and get people from all over the country and world answering these questions for you too as well. And the people that we deal with on that site are very, very helpful and friendly, and that's what it's all about, is creating this community and stuff. So, you know, they may have an answer that we don't even know of or come up with. I mean, you know, you can go to Connecticut too. It's not that far from New York City to Foxwoods.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't have a car, but you could still do it by, you know, by bus. They have shuttles and whatever all the time. So, what do they call them? Junkets and stuff. So,
yeah, I meant to mention this earlier in the show, but there's one of the guys that's playing in that on live tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I think he lives in Connecticut, so he's actually taking a train from Connecticut to New York City and then a bus from New York City to Atlantic City.
There you go.
And I'm like, wow.
All without a car.
All without a car. So, it's possible.
Yeah.
It's not much fun, but it's possible.
Yeah. It's not convenient, but it's possible.
Now to your first question, again, it's probably a reminder to folks that don't know, it's not illegal to play online poker other than a couple states, like Washington, I think. So what the law is, it's illegal for your bank to process a transaction between you and a site that they deem illegal. So it's really nothing wrong for you to do a cash out, but it's up to your bank to decide whether they want to process it or not. So I guess my advice is that, this is our advice always at the time, is that these non-completely legal sites, whatever you want to call them, non-U.S. facing sites, it's still operating in a wild, wild west mentality, right?
Yeah.
So you never know. I mean, we haven't heard of sites getting shut down in a long time, but that doesn't mean that the Justice Department isn't out there actively looking at some of these and could shut them down tomorrow, and then you're out that $600. So if you're comfortable losing that $600, leave it on there. If not, I would try to get it off and not be shocked if you can't get it off. But obviously, he must have got the money on, right?
Right.
So I think if you got the money on, decent chance you'd be able to get it back off.
Yeah. It is such a gray area that I'm really not even comfortable really answering this definitively for him at all, because I don't want to be complicit in anything.
We have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah, we have no idea. So really, it's really difficult. I don't know what site you're talking about. I don't know how you get the money on. I don't know. But yeah, that's pretty much all I want to say about it. I mean, it's not illegal to play online poker. And if you do get the money off, make sure you report the income.
Yes.
And you know what I mean? So whatever. But that's really as far as we should probably take it, because there's really no answer we can actually give you that would, I don't know, be definitive. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. We'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgraded membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Annie Up group discussions. Comes from Candace. In a Kansas casino, three players are in a hand, two of them for a side pot. The side pot players are asked to show their hands, and one shows a full house to the other, who mucks. As soon as he does, the player with the full house throws his cards face down in a slight forward motion, and they land near his stack, and he starts stacking the side pot. The dealer says, "Wait a minute, we still have the main pot." The floor is called. The third player argues that the player who won the side pot folded his cards, so the pot should go to him. The player who won the side pot says, "I didn't even realize he was still in the hand." The floor decides that the cards are live and awards the pot to the player with the full house, which would have been the winning hand rightfully. The player who says it was a mucked hand and the pot should be his gets angry and discusses the situation with the floor for more than 20 minutes and proceeds to call the poker room manager and the general manager. All are divided on the decision. Some floors say the call was fair, and others say, as a player, it is your responsibility to know what is going on in the game. It was his fault he did not see the other player was still in the hand, and his card should have been mucked. What would you do?
Elliot says, while the player that won the side pot should have tabled his cards, he doesn't appear to have actually discarded the hand. This is a very weak technicality with which the all-in player is trying to take the main pot. I feel that the winner of the side pot and holder of the best hand should be awarded all the chips in this situation. Yes, the players are all supposed to pay attention, but all-in and side pot situations specifically require the assistance of a dealer to settle all showdowns for the various pots. Almost all the rules of our game tilt towards making sure that the best hand wins the pot after the action is complete. The right hand got the money in this spot.
Yeah, this is, I mean, one, Sam used to always say that, Sam, our friend Sam Minatello.
Yeah.
You don't want to win on technicality, and we try not to let people win on technicalities. But two, if the guy didn't take his hand, first of all, he showed it on a side pot and won the side pot. So if you're saying his hand is dead, does that mean the other guy who lost the side pot now gets that money? Because he might. I mean, it's ridiculous. Plus, the cards are still there, not touching the muck. You know what I mean? Just because he showed it to one guy and then put it down again doesn't mean he mucked them. They haven't touched the muck. They haven't handed the dealer. The dealer hasn't mixed them up. The hand's retrievable. There are so many reasons why this hand is still alive and should be used to declare who wins the main pot. I mean, it's just somebody realized they were going to lose this hand and wanted to try to win it in any way they could. And they just felt bad when they knew they lost to a full house and said, oh, no, technicality, technicality. That's not right.
Yeah, well, again, this is... if you're this guy, don't be this guy.
Right.
Please. You know, you play poker, you try to have the best hand, and you win. And if you don't have the best hand, you lose. That's the way it should be. Now, this whole situation could have been a lot worse if other things happened. I mean, the way this played out was super easy, I thought. I'm really surprised that there was so much discussion about it because, you know, the cards weren't in the muck. They weren't... It wasn't like they weren't retrievable. They were just sitting in front of his chips, right?
Yeah.
So everything in this situation made this completely easy to come up with the right decision that this guy is awarded the pot. Now, where it gets a little more difficult is if it became a worse situation. You know, if he never had to show, you know, let's say the, I don't even know what a scenario would be where the side pot person doesn't show and mocks and this guy just mocks. And it goes completely in the muck, and they can't find the cards. Now it becomes a bigger deal, but at that point, then you don't know that you're winning a hand on a technicality, right?
Yeah.
So here, you know what the player's hand was because he showed it, properly tabled it, was awarded the pot, and now you see, you know, you're a loss, and now you're trying to find a way to win the pot, and that's really unfortunate.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, pretty cut and dried, I think.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? We get to complete O'Malley's move today. We're going to remind ourselves here with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're seated at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em, short-handed home game. There are only 5 players at the table, and no one is getting much respect for their pre-flop raises, especially since it's short-handed. We know these players very well, as this is our regular home game. Everyone bought in for 200, and it's fairly early in the night. Not a lot of chips have exchanged hands. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and we're in the cutoff with the jack of spades, jack of diamonds. This is a very good hand pre-flop, five-handed, so we're going to make a raise. The standard has been 3 to 4x big blind, so we err on the heavier side and make it 8 to go. The button calls, which is exactly what we didn't want, but the blinds get out of the way. There's $19 in the pot, and we see a beautiful flop of the ace of hearts, jack of clubs, seven of spades. We are going to proceed with this hand, hoping for the world. Our raise could look like a raise with kings or queens, so in this case, we're going to check and hope it looks like we're afraid of the ace. Our opponent may then either A, represent the ace, or 2, actually have it and bet for value. Our opponent is a tight passive player during tournaments. But in the cash games, he tends to be more loose passive, a peculiar shift in styles. If he's betting into a pot, it's probably because he has something. But he does play position very well. He started the hand with about 195 to our 205. Our opponent does exactly what we wanted. He bets $12 into the $19 pot. We call. There's a little more than $40 in the pot when the turn brings the 4 of hearts. Okay, that card puts a flush draw on the board, so we're going to come alive now. If he has some kind of a draw, we want to make him pay to see the river and hope the board pairs. The 7 of hearts would be nice. We make it $40 to go, and after some genuine hemming and hawing, he makes the call. There's now 120 in the pot, and the river is the queen of hearts. So, did we just lose this one? Are we checking here? Or are we betting for value? And if so, how much are we betting? What's the move?
I like to check call here. If he hit the flush, he should be looking for value, which will minimize our exposure. And if he checks behind, it's unlikely we would have gotten a call out of him anyway. My fear is the big bet, which could mean a bluff or a disguised value bet. And we set that up for our opponent with our play in this hand. I didn't like the flop check at all. Betting is always the best option there, I think. Why? Because alarm bells go off when we bet that safe turn card, which shuts down our action. So the fact that we got a call there forces us to consider a flush, and our opponent probably knows it. So if he's savvy, he'll find the right size bet here to make us make a mistake either way.
Wow. Did you write that much in the beginning? I remember you writing that much.
I did. I don't normally go into the whole play in the hand in the first part, but I thought it was important this time.
Holy cow. Okay.
He's in a bad spot here, I think.
I'm gonna take a different approach. I think we need to bet probably about a third of the pot. It would be consistent with our turn action, and it can totally serve as a blocking bet. You were talking about being afraid of the big bet. I think if you put a bet out, this person is going to think twice about putting out that big bluff bet, because now it looks like you're trying to value bet a big hand or a good hand. So he's going to think twice about it. I think we're only getting raised by a flush, and we can still get away from it at that point when you only bet that amount. It accomplishes quite a few things for us, and we can get value for our set when he hits his ace or makes two pairs. So I think we need to bet. I know it's tough to do that sometimes, but I think in this case we need to. All right, here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. This one has no easy answer. He either got there or he didn't. We've put about $60 into this pot, but I don't know if you'd call that pot committed. We're beat by a flush, king 10, pocket queens, or pocket aces. However, to me, I feel like there are plenty of hands we beat that could be in play that make sense. Aces up, or even a naked ace, could very well be in this guy's wheelhouse. Remember, he's more loose passive in the cash game. I'm going to bet we're ahead of his range, and I don't want to open the door for him to bluff at the pot, so I think a value blocker bet is in order. We've got 140 in front of us and a pot of 120. We could bet one-third of the pot. If he raises us, we can reassess the situation. If he calls, we're probably in good shape. But we are leaving ourselves an escape plan. Having 100 in a 1-2 game certainly leaves a lot of play to be had. We bet the 40 and are happy when our opponent tanks for several seconds. He ultimately decides to make the call. We turn over our set, he sighs, shows an ace, and mucks. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, out of position poker can be dangerous, especially when you flop a monster. That's why I recommend the value blocker bet. I hope to see you on the felt.
You know, I like the blocking bet here if we had played the hand differently. That's my problem. I'm glad it worked out for O'Malley, but I wouldn't have liked to have had to lay down that hand to a raise, and that's what I've been worried about, so.
Well, it's exactly how I would have played it, and the exact outcome I wanted. Another day, another dollar.
Yeah, well, hey, you guys, that's good that we won the hand with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It all worked out, but again, I don't understand the checking on the flop and then betting the turn. That really, I think a savvy player is going to see through that at some point.
Yeah. There are some people who don't understand the whole, hey, it's fishy that you're checking now. They just think maybe you're afraid of something, and that's what you want them to think. And then, so yeah, there are some reasons to do it, but I agree with you. I probably would have bet.
You know, poker's all about selling your story, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think when you raise pre-flop, and then check the flop, and then bet a turned card that doesn't seem to change anything, now you're making it easy for people to put the story together. And I never want my opponents to put my story together. I want my story to be believable, but be the wrong one.
Yeah. Right. The theorem of poker.
Yeah, so.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gowan.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wasserkin.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Dora Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast Antia Magazine. com. This week we have a situation from Michael Pezzi.
Nice.
All right. He says, 1-2 no limit casino cash game, sitting with about $330, up 100 for the night. Congratulations. He's in the big blind, and there's a straddle. And he says, go ahead, Scott, let him have it. Damn straddlers.
Get off my lawn.
That's right. Folds around to the hijack, who calls the straddle, and it folds to the small blind, who looks and says to the dealer, is that a straddle? And gets the yes and raises to $17. So he's going to give us a little bit more information here before we go on. The Straddler has about 80 left. The Hijack has 120. Small Blind has us covered. So we look down Big Blind at Jack of Spades, Jack of Hearts. And even though it's a situation, I guess we can pause here and act like it's not.
Okay, well, first of all, who sits down with $230? Because if he's up 100 to 330, it's like, can I get a two racks and a third? I don't know. That's pretty funny.
Maybe he has $30 from the last time he was there and forgot to cash out.
Ah, there you go. That's what it is. He pulled it out of his pocket. And
yeah.
No, seriously, I think this is one of those situations where because someone else raised and it wasn't the Straddler, that I'm not going to just go, oh, I need to be the one that keeps this guy in check. I'm going to forget about the Straddler, and what would I do with Jack-Jack when someone raised, I think, at this point, is how I might look at this. I don't think I'm going to re-raise with Jack-Jack with a Straddler still yet to act, and someone's raised knowing there's a Straddler. Now, that's not saying that that hand has to be quality, but I think that if I'm playing Jack-Jack, I don't know if I'm re-raising with Jack-Jack hardly ever anyway, unless I'm playing some loosey-goosey guy. So I might just call the 17 and see how that plays out. Because if the Straddler shows after that, then we'll get more information, because then you got another guy who raised who might now call that shove, and then I'm like, okay, now I know my jacks aren't good, and I can get away for $17, but I'm not going to fold them either. So I think I might just call.
Okay. I like that. I think I probably would, too.
That's how I feel.
Because you're right, because the Straddler, again, if we're profiling Straddlers, and let's go ahead and profile
them. Yeah, let's go ahead and do them.
Usually when you straddle, it's because you want to raise. And particularly when you get somebody that's already raised, now you get really excited, right?
Yeah.
So there's a good possibility that the Straddler's going to do the raising for us. And then you're right, we get a whole other round of action before it gets back to us, before we can decide at that point what we want to do. So I'm quite happy to put the 17 or whatever, the 15 extra ed bucks in here and see what happens. All right, so he says, we know the small blind's a solid player, and with a raise from that spot, I want to tread lightly a bit, so I call the 17. That's actually another good point, too. I mean, when you're raising with a small blind, that's some gutsy stuff.
Right? Yeah,
excuse me. So the Straddler calls the 17, and then the Hijack is the one that ships all in for 122.
Oof.
Small blind tanks for a bit before stating, okay, let's see what happens. I call, and calls $105 more. So now it's to us.
Yeah, I'm letting it go. I mean, first of all, you're covered by the small blind. Someone else is deciding that all of these raises, you know, it doesn't matter how good their hands are, because, you know what I mean? Because there's no way you can make that raise bluffing, I don't think, at this point. It's too many people in the hand, too many people willing to call and make raises before that point. Your jacks can't be good. Someone's got you beat. Why risk, what did we have, 330? Why risk all your money to see a small blind now wake up with kings or something? You know, I just, there's no way. I think I let it go.
Or even if they don't wake up with that, you could have ace-king, they could have overs.
No, you could be racing forever, and four or five cards.
And you're going to be in this pot against at least two other opponents, maybe a third now. So there are those big cards out, and so now you've really turned this into a set mining, I think, for the most part. And that's a very expensive price to pay to set mine.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
And I got to pause here to say, too, this is the other reason I hate Straddlers in games, because what they force is players like me, and I think this Hijack, now everybody gets a little trickier, right? Because you all know the Straddler's there, you all know he's a Deutsche Bank that's probably going to raise more often than not, so now you can play a little differently. You can hide in the weeds knowing that the guy's probably going to raise, and then you can spring to action later on. And I just hate that, too. I hate that at all. I hate everything about it. But in this situation, I think it helps us. You know, so it costs us $15 to see what happens, but I'm done. And thanks to the Straddler for creating an environment where this Hijack can hide and spring to action.
When this hand's over, remind me to talk to you about something else when the show is almost over, because I don't want to forget. I'm getting old, and I tend to forget things sometimes, but I don't want to interrupt this, and I want to get this hand. I want to get through it so we don't forget the details, but I'm going to talk to you about something after this, so go ahead.
Are we going to pick on Straddlers?
Sort of.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm definitely not going to let you forget that.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Let's see. So our hero says, at this point, I feel as though I'm ahead of the Hijack, because with a straddle, he likely raises right away with strong hands. small blind's internal debate and call confuses me as why would he reshove with a hand better than Jack Jack to try and eliminate me and just get heads up with the two smaller all-ins. I think it's maybe 10-10 or ace-king, but I certainly worry about queen-queen. Regardless, after adding it all up, I shove my remaining 313 into the pot. Stradler puts his remaining 63 in the pot. Wow.
Wow.
Four-way all-in before our preflop. That's why I like limit poker.
Oh, man. That's cool.
Oh, I'm sorry. And then I forgot the small blind still has a call. So the small blind tanks for a while before making the $200-plus dollar call. And as we go to the flop, the small blind flashes queen-queen. and so he says, ugh, flop is king, 4-8 rainbow, hijack excitedly flips up 4-4, and we are dead twice. Turn is a deuce, river is a jack, woohoo!
Scoop
the $795 pot and run home to give it all to the wife, hoping it might mean I'll get lucky again. side note, it didn't. So there's no right way to play Jack-Jack, but it's fun when they all run out like that. Well, I would totally agree it's fun when it runs out like that, but savor that. Yeah. I'm not going to go back to my Ray Zelensky line because you don't remember it from
the first time. I don't know what that means.
But savor it, because I can't imagine you're ever going to win in this situation ever again with Jack.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's exactly what we said, too, that the small blind woke up with a bigger hand than ours, so we were dead to two outs. And then when the guy flopped a set, I mean, that didn't really matter because you were still dead to two outs, but wow. Yeah, you were really up against it. Even that king came on the flop, so if you were facing ace-king, you would have lost to that, too. You might have been. I don't know if one of the other guys had ace-king. They might have. So you would have been dead to that.
That's
you know
true.
I mean?
There's a hand we didn't see.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you could have even been losing three ways until that river, and maybe more. Wow, that's very fortunate. That's a big pot for, you know, for a 1-2 game. Pretty big pot.
Yeah, so... kind of interested to buy the hijacks play here.
So yeah.
Doubles the straddle with pocket fours, perfectly acceptable. And then there's a small blind raise, which again is gutsy, like I say, so I got to give it a little bit more credit. And decided to shove with pocket fours?
I know. What is that?
And we had to think that there was a possibility that we could be in this hand, or the straddler, or one of the two of us would be in, and ended up being both of us. That's a big pot to play with pocket fours. I mean, I'd much rather play it with pocket jacks.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah.
even scared about playing it with pocket jacks, so, wow.
Well, one of the things that we have to always remember, too, is we're not there when we're doing these hands.
True, right.
This person who had fours could have said, hey, you know what? I play No Limit Hold'em. I play the player, not the cards. Doesn't matter that I have 4-4. But I may be getting this vibe that these guys are just being crazy reckless and they really don't have hands. If I shove this 100 and something in when they're just making it 17, you know, or whatever, they may say, whoa, this guy must have aces and he's slow playing, you know, whatever. He may have thought he told a story that could have added up to ace-ace and they should fold, even though that really wasn't the story we all got. Some people aren't good at telling stories. So there are these vibes that people get, too, that say, you know, 4-4 doesn't mean anything. It's I'm playing the players and I shove. There are people who shove at nothing all the time. In this case, we knew somebody had jack-jack, and we thought it out a little more and realized we were probably beat. And so that could be why the hijack played that way. I don't know. I mean, we were not there, so.
Right. I mean, I would rather make that move with a suited connector or something than I would pocket fours, though.
Yeah, because you're hoping that if they do call you, you're going to have this multiple ways of making hands to beat that.
Right,
hand that's dominating you.
We're here. it's a nice move if it works, because there's 3 times 17 in there, so it's a nice little pot for your $122 stack, right?
Yeah.
If you can take it down right now, but if it doesn't work, then you're like almost screwed, because you're gonna have to hit one of your fours or get some kind of wheel, kind of or backdoor flush or something to maybe win. So you don't have a lot of options to win other than to get everybody to fold. So suited connectors, I mean, even if you're wrong and you get called, then you have a lot more ways of winning the pot, I think. So
yeah. I mean, I think yeah, unless you're specifically up against an unmade hand. You're literally screwed. I mean, you have to hit a set.
Yeah.
Or like you said, make some sort of four-card wheel with 4-4 or something. But, yeah, that's a... Like I said, I think it mostly was just a vibe the guy might have gotten. Who knows? Because go from 17 to 122, that's a big leap unless you have a really big hand.
Yeah. I mean, even a hand like an ace eight or something, I would rather have with the pocket fours here, because maybe you're getting called by kings and queens and you hit your ace.
You have that ace, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, fours. That's wow. Wow. He got what was coming to him. So. And we totally didn't get what was coming to us. But we got a lot.
We got almost $800 on that pot. That's crazy. Yeah,
that's absolutely crazy.
And to think about it, the best hand that got it all in was queen queen on an $800 pot. Preflop. Yeah. I mean, not preflop. Yeah, preflop. So, I mean, that's weird.
You got to feel bad for that guy, right? I mean, yeah. Obviously, we don't know what the straddler had, but I'm guessing if he had kings, obviously, he's showing because he would have won, right? So, the only other hand he could have had that was better than us is aces. So, I got to think the queens were the best of the four, right?
Right.
And when you get it in four ways with queens, I'm just already resigning myself to the fact that there's aces or kings among one of those hands, right?
Right.
And then to see, hey, whoa, I've actually got the best hand, and then bam.
And then bam. And the river, too. I mean, unless somebody hit the ace king or something, but I mean, yeah, on the river, too. What a brutal way to lose that pot.
I mean, the queens were losing on the flop.
Oh, on the flop of the four. That's right. Oh, man, what a brutal way to lose.
Yeah.
Okay, so I remembered on my own. I don't need let me ask you something. So you're always railing on these straddlers, right?
I am.
And one of your major, nits about it is that they are wreaking havoc in the game, and they want to raise, and they're always trying to get more money in the pot and all that, right? Is that fair to say?
I would say my bigger argument is they're just Deutsche Banks in general. But, yes, my second one would be that, yes.
Right, but we're talking about strictly poker-related, not personality-related.
Okay.
So the fact is that, yeah, that's what pisses you off, is that they do these things to get more money in the pot, to make the game harder for other people to play, right? Is that basically what you're saying?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, that's probably not how I would phrase it, but that's an accurate assessment, yes.
Okay. So can I ask you something? How is that any different than playing in a game with a kill that you love? Because although it's like involuntary...
I don't like the straddle. That's the best answer I can give.
Well, the kill is the same thing as a straddle. It's just that it's forced upon someone to do
right.
it in a
so
position.
I do think that's a difference. It's forced on you rather than being a choice that you make.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying is sure, this guy who's a straddler is forcing you to play a game you don't want to play, just like the kill is forcing someone to play a game they don't want to play.
When I get on the board for a 4-8 Omaha kill game, I know what I'm getting myself into. Right? I'm signing up for that kill and mm-hmm. how that changes the game. When I get on the board for a 1-2 no limit game, I'm not signing up for a Deutsche Bank to be straddling.
But you are, because straddle is legal.
Well,
so it's always a possibility.
Also,
just like a kill is always possible, but it doesn't always have to happen.
Right, but it's part of the fabric of the game.
So
now,
is a straddle.
Yeah, I can't control whether somebody straddles or not, but there is a difference, I think.
Well, I understand what you're saying, because you're being pedantic about the name of the game, but what I'm saying is... What I'm saying is when you walk into a poker room and the rules in the poker room say that you can have a straddle in no-limit games, or any game,
right?
You are accepting that rule as part of that game. It's whether or not someone wants to enact it. And a kill, yes, it's permanently part of a game.
I'm not telling people not to straddle or making them uncomfortable.
No, but I'm just saying...
I'm upset about it myself.
Yeah, you're upset about it because what you said was that it makes the game bigger than it should be, and makes people uncomfortable. And when you play in a kill game, you do the exact same thing that a straddler does when you play. I've played kills with you
absolutely.
Before,
yes.
And you're the exact same thing as a Deutsche Bank straddler. You always raise to when it's already a kill, so it's already 8-16. You'll make it 12, 20, you know what I mean? So that's what you do because you want to make them uncomfortable.
Yes.
So it's very. So why do you come down so hard on these straddlers when they want to do exactly what you're
I'm
doing,
American,
except they don't want
to... I like to not pay attention to how the things that I complain about I do myself. That's my right as an American.
Let's make America great again.
Vote long for president.
I can't. I just... In the middle of that...
No, you're completely right. I have no argument. I'm not trying to have an argument. I don't like straddling, but I like killing. And I was saying there's some semantical differences there.
Yeah.
But in a wider view, yes. They're all the same things. And I'm bitching about one thing that I don't like and doing it myself.
So we won't go as far as to call you a hypocrite, right? We'll just say you...
You can just call me Hippo.
Hippo. Or Crit.
Or Crit.
You little critter. No, but I just, it was weird right in the middle of that hand. It came to me. I'm like, wait a minute. This is sort of what Scott does when we play Omaha 8 with a kill. This is the way Scott acts, and he hates this stuff. Why does he do it?
That is a good question, though, for our Poker Radius fan base. I'd like to hear an answer to that. You know, whether people see the hairs that I'm splitting or they think I'm ridiculous.
Yeah, because, I mean, we understand that you sign up for a kill game because it's likely there's going to be a kill pot and it's out of your control. But then again, if you sign up for a no-limit game, straddle is out of your control if someone decides to do it. So it's not written in the rules that there's going to be a straddle every hand. Or there could be a game like that, but you know to sign up for or not to. But right, it's just funny. You act the same.
I think you're glossing over the personality problem here because, again, it's just I play poker live to have fun.
Right.
I'd love to walk out of that poker room with more money than I came in with. Don't get me wrong, but I'm there to have fun. It's a hobby for me, right? So I want to play with people that make the game fun. And
right, but
I suppose there are people out there that say when I raise my every kill button that I'm not making it fun for them, and all right, that's fair. But I think straddlers in general, we've already gone through this before,
yeah,
their personality are to be straddlers in real life. And I just don't like this. And I don't want to play poker with them. That doesn't make it more fun for me.
They're straddlers in real life. How do you, like, you're in the line at the DMV, you know? What does that straddler act like? You know, does he grab two numbers? Does he try to jump ahead of you in line? Because he's a straddler in real life. That's what I'm going to say when someone, like, cuts me off in traffic. You straddler!
And this is funny that we're taping right now. I just got a Facebook message from Malcolm O'Malley that all I could see because I objected was, are we in trouble here? And I know he's not talking about the show because he can't hear the show that we're recording it now, so I'm sure it's about something else.
Oh, no.
It's just kind of funny timing.
I'm glad your attentions are focused on Facebook instead of our show.
No, it comes up on my screen automatically. So I said I didn't read the message.
I know.
Be distracted. But it's funny. Maybe he agrees with me on the whole straddler thing, and now he's worried that you're making a good point for the first time.
Forever.
11 years.
No, I know what I think he's thinking. I think he's wondering if he didn't do a show for this or something, but he did do a show. So that's why he's wondering, are you
now
guys recording?
Mass speculation on what this...
yeah, tune in next week when we find out what Malcolm O'Malley meant by his cryptic message to Scott on Facebook. I'm Chris Cosenza.
Yeah, I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.